Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Straight Popcorn Podcast. My name is Alan Nichols.
And I'm Brock Benson Sharp.
And we got a lot to talk about here today because Brock and I, we missed a podcast earlier this week, and we got a lot of news to cover. Do you want to start us off?
Yeah, first I would like to start the podcast by letting everyone know that I am dog sitting and I have a really chatty dog in the background. So if you hear a dog barking at any moment, I apologize if it removes you from the awesomeness of the conversation or whatever. But that's what's going on. So sorry for that. It's not Dr. Doolittle over here, I promise.
Okay, well, now that that's been explained and any random barking, you understand where that's coming from. It's not your subconscious. It's not something going on in your life that's reminding you to go take care of your dog. No, it's just this podcast. So
get ready for the Summer of Sam version of the Straight Popcorn Podcast.
We're just going to, you know what? It'd be great if we just started adding in like random clips that don't seem like they're a part of the podcast, but seem like they're going on in these people's lives that are listening, you know, that just to really kind of screw around with them.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, we would be remiss. Of course, this is like the big thing going on right now. And Brock and I were actually talking about this beforehand because we were not certain really how to, I don't know, even broach this conversation. But of course, we have to because it's connected into a bigger story that we're talking about. But Anyway, of course, many of you by this point have heard about the entire situation going on with Bryan Singer.
Yeah, I mean, it's we don't want to like go too far into it because we both kind of find disgust in the fact that the media runs too crazy on both sides of these arguments. But from what we understand is that there was about 15 years ago, a pedophilia ring that was going on in Hollywood, and that Bryan Singer has been accused of being a part of this, but we don't really know the details yet. Now, from what I understand from the lawyers of Bryan Singer, and note that this is not a defense of Bryan Singer, this is what his lawyers said, is that they have proof that by receipts, phone records, and other things that he was actually not in Hawaii when these events supposedly took place. So we'll let it right way out. What we're more interested in is how this is going to affect the X-Men films going forward.
Yeah, I mean, and clearly this is going to have a big impact. Bryan Singer was supposed to be at WonderCon this weekend. He pulled out. That's to be expected when things like this happen. You know, you're not going to go to one of those things and expect questions about the project you're working on. Whoever's there, you know, if he had been there, for instance, the media, of course, would be going there and asking him about this situation directly. I'm sure at this point, Fox Entertainment is like, you're staying away from any press whatsoever. So into that aspect, it's going to affect this film and everything like that. So I think that's what we're going to focus on here. Reserve judgment until an actual conviction has been handed out or the case has been overturned or whatever. We'll let that, you know, stay within those realms. We'll focus on the entertainment side of things here. But we wanted to touch on that briefly just to kind of, you know, clarify all of that. But anyway, X-Men Days of Future Past, aside from all that news about Bryan Singer, there is a lot going on with those particular things. Last week, they actually finally showed us a one-minute scene from the beginning of the film, which is the initial battle that happens in the future. You want to talk a little bit about that? Because I believe you saw it, Brock.
Yeah. Basically, the clip just shows the future Sentinels battling with the X-Men. Now, my first initial reaction to this is pretty underwhelmed. To me, I don't know if you picked up on the same thing, but it kind of had a feel of Street Fighter.
Hmm. A little bit, I guess, because it does feel like they're going to like separate arenas getting ready for the Sentinel attack. But
well, it was more like the genericness of how the characters were approached to me. Like, I don't know. Like, there's something about the way Marvel's handling this, their franchises, versus the way 20th Century Fox is handling theirs. Mm-hmm. And I'm really hoping for the best, because I do like this storyline from the comics and would like to see some version of it on the screen. But the scene that they showed us just felt very generic and 90s light to me, with some really cool special effects.
Well, here's my concern with the film, and I've been pretty vocal, you know, I don't know if it's so much on this podcast, but I've been vocal in just, you know, any conversation I've been a part of. I've never been a big fan of Bryan Singer's take on X-Men. Not to say the stories are terrible and not really going that direction, but he does not focus on the ensemble of characters. He focuses on three. And yeah, it's always a Wolverine story. And this one is too. The only one that was not a Wolverine story was X-Men First Class, which was Matthew Vaughn. That film was the first time that I actually felt like I watched a legitimate X-Men film. And it wasn't even with your primary X-Men. It was with a mishmash cast of X-Men from different, you know, origins and stuff like that. But it was brilliantly done. It was set in a very cool time period. You know, there were a lot of things going on that worked in that film. When you go to this film and you see scenes like that, it feels really similar to me, like even like the battle scene, for instance, in X-Men 3, you know. And I don't really know how to feel about that. I mean, I think that these are some wonderful characters. Like, for instance, I was excited when I heard Ellen Page was coming back, you know, to play Shadowcat. You know, Kitty Pryde is one of my favorite characters, actually, in the X-Men universe. And to feel like, okay, well, she'll probably be in the film for now, like, 5 minutes, completely underplayed, not really... You know, there's not going to be any depth to that character, just like there hasn't been any depth to any of the other characters in the previous films. It's disappointing, you know, and I don't know. And that's what this trailer kind of gave me, that feeling of like, that's what we're going to expect.
Well, and another thing I will point out, because I kind of share your sentiments about Bryan Singer. I think Bryan Singer has been riding the coattails of great writers for a while. Mm-hmm. The Usual Suspects, which was his landmark film that put him on the map. Well, that movie was written by Christopher McQuarrie, who's gone on to do a bunch of other bigger films. Mm-hmm. Then you have At Pupil, which I think is a cool film, but that wasn't even written by Bryan Singer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying the guy's a terrible director, but I don't think he's as solid as a director as Hollywood thinks.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that can be proven in even, there's a variety of films that he's done in recent history. I mean, obvious one to turn to would be Superman Returns, you know, which was really his child, you know, from conception to creation to finalization. And also, what was that? Jack the Giant Killer?
Yeah, I totally did not enjoy that film. But going back on the same coin, I did like Valkyrie. So
okay, I didn't really enjoy Valkyrie. I don't know. I mean, to me, I thought that that could have been a far more interesting film. But I was kind of hoping they would take the approach, like, what if it worked? Because I think that was also right on the heels of Inglourious Basterds, who did take that approach. Like, what if, like, something like this did happen and it worked? So I don't know. But I don't know. Maybe it wasn't a bad film. And maybe it was just the state of mind that I was in when I saw it. But, yeah. I don't know. When it comes to this film, I have mixed feelings.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not. I'm with you. I'm totally not a fan of his take on the X-Men. I think Vaughn did a better job. I think Vaughn got the Claremont idea of what the X-Men are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think Singer's version is way too sterile for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like that aspect. It doesn't feel like it's part of the real world. You know, Avengers isn't exactly part of the real world, but they make you believe it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that I've had with Bryan Singer's X-Men. It's too, it, like, even in, like, the scenes when they go into the danger room,
mm-hmm.
like, the outs, like, the exterior just looks very sterile. It looks very, Sorry, I'm having a loss for words here.
No worries.
It looks like steel. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, a lot of his stuff looks that way, and I just don't dig it. It just has no nuance or texture to it.
Well, the thing that I just feel disappointed about was I was hoping that going for the momentum of First Class, we would finally have a new X-Men series. This is starting to feel like a step back. And even though technically the trailers look astonishing, you know, they really do. But I don't know, just watching that 1 minute clip, here's the thing. It is a 1 minute clip from the top of the movie. So that doesn't really tell you much. And they don't really show you anything. They show you a few characters, like Sunspot is in it. Who else was in the opening of that trailer? No, Storm was in it, Iceman. And I've read a few descriptions of like what happens to them. But other than that, I don't know.
Yeah, I think this is one of those, like, we're going to have to see the movie and definitely come back to the table and do a review. I'm hoping for the best. The newest trailer looks really great.
Yeah.
But that's also editing. And I've seen a lot of movies that, you know, I built up in my mind. I thought were going to be amazing by the trailer and then got to the theater and I was like, what the fuck is this shit? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, my thought is like a lot of people who cut the trailers together, they probably should be the ones doing the movie, too. But of course, you know, cutting together a trailer is much different than cutting together a movie. But they have a gift. I will say that whoever's cutting together their trailers knows what the hell they're doing.
Yeah. And I mean, if anybody hasn't seen the newest trailer, it's definitely probably the best out of the bunch.
Yeah. And it is the final trailer.
I mean, they use Led Zeppelin in the trailer, which I know you said that it reminds you of Puff Daddy, which that, yeah, as a Led Zeppelin enthusiast over here, fucking why that ever happened is beyond me, that they allowed Puff Daddy to go make a fucking version of Kashmir. Just infuriates me on another level.
Do you think that they really allowed him to? Do you think Led Zeppelin actually had any...
Oh, yeah, I mean, their members of Led Zeppelin are in the video, so oh. That would probably be the first indicator. I think that I kind of wonder if they were high that year. That's the only reasoning I can think of for anybody to do anything with Puff Daddy from Led Zeppelin. But
cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug. Yeah, it's just, I won't go on a big Led Zeppelin versus Puff Daddy discussion here, but...
There's a versus?
Well, yeah, correct.
I don't know. Actually, it's really just because of the old Godzilla film. That's the only reason why. That song was on the radio all the freaking time.
Can we stop calling that movie the Godzilla film, by the way?
Yeah, because like, there's a new
There
one.
Was nothing Godzilla about that film to me. Like, it was... Some stupid producers that probably had never seen a Godzilla film in their life making up what they thought Godzilla actually was.
Give Matthew Broderick. Yeah, we'll have him do his Ferris routine.
Yeah, let's replace Raymond Burr with Matthew Broderick. That's such a fucking brilliant idea.
Out with Perry Mason, in with Ferris Bueller.
Right. I hated it. I could not get behind that when it came out.
Oh, God.
Everybody's like, oh, you're not going to go see Godzilla? No, I've seen that movie. And until I see something that looks like that film, I'm not going to go see it. Because the new film to me looks more like a Godzilla film. Like, I can see Bryan Cranston kind of playing that Raymond Burr type of role.
Yeah.
So I'm on board with that one. So
I am excited to go see it. So, and I haven't been excited for like anything Godzilla related in, I don't know, ever. So it will be cool to actually check it out just because it looks really astonishing. So
I'm just looking forward to the porn spinoff.
Oh, actually, they kind of had that in the trailer if you remember.
Oh, yeah. But the movie itself, I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, hopefully they'll get like, you know, Ron Jeremy on board for the Raymond Burr role or something.
God.
I don't...
No, maybe he could actually play the monster.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a monster. You know, this is a definite fact.
Well,
sorry, I didn't mean to go on that whole thing. But yeah, check out the new X-Men trailer. It's pretty epic. I'm just hoping that the movie delivers on the trailer. So.
And there is one last piece. Well, I say last piece, but we got a rumor to cover also later. However, one thing that apparently is the case now, Rogue is actually still in the film. So for those of you... Oh, do you want to say something? Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, who gives a shit? Because I cannot stand Anna Paquin at all.
Yeah, Anna Paquin is like... I don't know. I mean, not that I think she did a terrible job with Rogue or anything like that, but I don't know. Anyway, I mean, she's still in the film. So if you guys don't know the history of this, this is what's going on. They have so many damn faces in this film. And they were trying to bring everyone back. And Anna Paquin was one of those people that were like, yes, let's bring her back for Rogue. Okay, sounds reasonable. So they put her ass in the film. And then they take her ass out of the film because they run out of time. And the little story that they have with her, they said, well, it doesn't really go with the flow of the film. It kind of goes in a different direction. We're going to remove it. So they remove her from the film. And that's after bringing her on, paying her a salary. It happens. Actually, I did like her costume, though. There was a cover photo on, I think it was Empire, like a couple of months back. And wow, that's actually pretty cool. Too bad she's not part of the film now. And now the recent news is, oh, okay, we're going to put her back in. Because, you know, we have so many faces that we're not going to really go into in this particular series. So we'll just throw it back in again, just another face in the crowd. So she's back in the film, guys, so I think that's it.
Well, to speak to that, I'll tell you my bone to pick with Anna Paquin. Is it Paquin?
Yeah, Paquin.
Or is it Poquin? Okay, Paquin. Okay, thank you. Is her southern tone is probably one of the worst ones I've ever seen in the history of film.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a huge fan of True Blood. I think it's... Yeah. And I'm probably going to get a lot of backlash from this. One of the worst shows on television.
Yeah, I feel that way.
And not only that, like, you have to watch the show listening to her southern accent. And then she does it also in the X-Men movies. So, yeah, I mean, she's a beautiful girl. I'm sure she's very sweet. I'm just not a fan of... If she's going to play a role, I wish it wasn't someone from the South. So
right. I've seen her play some really great roles in the past. And, you know, I think she's like an Academy Award winner, if I'm not mistaken.
She is. She is. She's great. You're right. She's great in other stuff. It's just here lately, it seems like everything she plays is Southern and she doesn't do it well. And that's my problem with her.
Yeah. And I you know what? I have a roommate or had a roommate, rather, who loved True Blood, and he kept trying to convince me to watch it with him all the time. And I watched a few episodes. I had no interest, but yeah, her voice on that show drove me nuts. I couldn't stand her actually on that program. Maybe it was the bleach blonde hair. I don't know. It was a mess. And actually, you know what? I saw her on the Comic-Con panel from this last year at San Diego. And I don't know, she was just icy, not interested, didn't want to be there. Maybe she had found out that, hey, she's been completely cut out of the film. But I don't know, like, she's bizarre. So, I mean, to me, it's like no big deal. I don't know, it always kind of goes back to the fact to me, though, that I remember the X-Men growing up. I was one of those kids who were definitely indoctrinated by the 90s cartoon. And there's part of me that wants to see an X-Men film that kind of goes back to that. That includes Rogue. That includes Cyclops, who's also missing from these films now.
Which is aggravating the shit out of me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so angry about that. Like, and I know there's not a lot of things that really get me angry, and it's such a stupid thing to be angry about, to be honest. But it's like, Cyclops is a major part of the X-Men.
Oh, yeah.
And they've just decided, he's not important. Wolverine, though, let's do every story about him because he's magical.
And outside of, to be honest with you, probably the only film that I've enjoyed Wolverine so far is The Wolverine.
I agree. I thought that film was very well written. It was the first time they took that character in an interesting direction. And they incorporated some of the elements from the previous films, you know, to kind of build up to that story. So I enjoyed that film. I thought that was a really good tale. Anyway, I don't know. So, I mean, I just wanted to kind of briefly touch here, too, like Age of Apocalypse and stuff like that. I was hearing some rumors last week. Did you hear anything about that?
I read a little bit. It kind of escapes me right now. Go ahead and talk up on it because I may chime in. I've got to remember what it all I read.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time remembering it too. But, well, I mean, you know, look, not to go back into the Bryan Singer stuff too deeply, but I will be interested to see what ends up happening here because I know they were already in production and pretty much moving from one thing to the next. You know, that's how Fox basically lined this up. And I know that I was... Scott Lobdell did the original Age of Apocalypse story, right?
Pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you? I don't know if I should share this. Did I ever tell you my Scott Lobdell encounter before?
No.
Okay. I was out here at Barnes and Noble in at the Grove, and this was a couple of years ago now. And so, my aunt actually was with me. And she was actually wanting to check out some graphic novels and stuff like that, you know, because she was interested in, you know, picking up a comic book, finding something interesting that she could really get into. And so she starts talking to this gentleman at the graphic novel section of Barnes & Noble. And I go up there and meet her, and I kind of recognize the guy, like I've seen him somewhere before. And he's talking a little bit, and he's like, he actually basically says like he's in the industry, and I'm like, okay. So long and short of it is, it ends up being Scott Lobdell, and he's like, and I'm like, oh my god, yeah, I totally remember your work, you know, Age of Apocalypse, you know, and a lot of the X-Men stories and stuff like that. So anyway, he's basically hitting on my aunt because my aunt's not much older than me; she's a few years, and he's there with his girlfriend.
Wow.
And you know, he's trying to be subtle about it and everything like that, and I think his girlfriend wasn't there at the beginning of the conversation but was definitely there at the end, and she was like an artist friend at the time, and I'm basically putting him out there because he ends up doing something really big, like a giant Jackass move. So anyway, my aunt, they exchange emails and stuff like that because my aunt's thinking like professionally and stuff like that. He ends up sending her an email, like maybe, I don't know, maybe a couple of months later, wanting to like, basically a proposition email.
What did it say? I'm curious.
Pretty much like, hey, you know, and actually she had been clear that she was married too. Okay. Cause at that time, you know, that was when her husband was still alive and stuff like that and not interested at all. And, like the email, I totally saw it. It was, you know what? I might have to post it online, to be honest. This guy should be a little bit ashamed of what he did, but it was pretty much like, yeah, I think you're sexy and, you know, I'd love to have like, love to have sex with you sometime or whatever, if you're interested. Like, that's essentially what it says. Like, he's just straight out there, doesn't give a shit about the fact that he may end up being in a relationship with someone or, you know, that she's married. He just is like, basically like, yeah, you know, let's have sex sometime.
Wow. No Waffle House coffee.
Yeah. And what is he doing now anyway? Isn't he like writing Superman, if I'm not mistaken, or Justice League or some shit like that over at DC?
I'm not even sure, honestly. Like, the only thing I ever kept up with his really was the X-Men stuff.
Right.
Do you remember the X-Men Alpha series?
Kind of, but that was a while ago.
Yeah, I just thought about that for some reason. He did that too.
I do know that he mentioned that he was working with Jennifer Love Hewitt at the time because she was doing a graphic novel, and it was I feel really bad for his girlfriend. I don't know if she was like on board or knew any of this stuff that was going on. I don't think there's no way that they can still be together. If they are, I might have to think about maybe cutting some of this out of the podcast. But anyway, like, she was like the illustrator on that book and he's like writing it. And then years later, of course, like, you know, not even years later, like a year later, that's when I heard that he was working on the New 52 over at DC. And I think he started off with Teen Titans and started moving on. And I'm like, oh my God, like, this guy has no idea. Just like, to me, it's just hysterical, the entire thing.
Well, I guess the internet as a collective whole hates Scott Lobdell because there's a lot of pages that come up when you search for.
Well, everyone, I just want to let you know, he is a douchebag, like straight up a douchebag. I actually have a photo with him.
Do you?
I do. I will post it online. Just to let you guys know, this is true. This is not me making up some bullshit. I will post the photo. I'll post the email. Hell, I'll even post his email address. No.
Hell yeah. Burn the world down, El.
Yep. Burn it. No, I'm sorry. I've been sitting on this story for years, and I'm like, hey, I do a podcast now. I should totally throw this out there.
You found your outlet.
Victory!
Hey, maybe we should do a reading on the next podcast of the actual email.
It's very short, but I'll do it in Scott Lobdell's creepy voice. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to have sex with me sometime? I'd like to take it in the butt.
Not take it in the butt.
Oh, God. Well, Scott Lobdell. There you go. But that's my Age of Apocalypse.
He's going to put the Age of Apocalypse on that ass.
Oh, God. It was like, you know, at first I'm like trying to remember what he was working on because it didn't just come right to my head like Age of Apocalypse. I recognized the name, but I was like, okay, what the hell did you work on? And he's basically, you could kind of see he was a little irritated with me because I wasn't coming right to it. And but he was totally trying to use like his credentials and stuff like that to like hook up. It was hysterical.
Wow.
Oh, God. So, yeah, that's that.
Fuck you, Scott Lobdell. Yep,
pretty much. That's what he wants, too. Anyway, so we should probably go ahead and move on to the next bit of news. Hans Zimmer to score Batman Superman.
Yeah, it's so awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be the best music ever. It's going to be totally original.
And you've got a Hans Zimmer score.
Done! And then you add a little bit of a flair to it, like...
This is a guy, like, we were both discussing this on the phone, that... He used to be really good. I will say, like the 12 Years a Slave score, even though it was very similar to the Man of Steel score, but I really dug it for some reason. But I mean, every score he does now is like, it sounds like flies coming out of a tree. Is the only way I know to describe it.
Or bats flying out of a cave.
Yeah.
I would have to agree with that. I mean, I did actually like the music from Inception. I felt that one actually did
match
the intensity of that film. However, not a big fan of the music for, you know, the Dark Knight series. Just felt like that could have gone a little bit deeper. Actually, I don't know about you, but I'm the kind of person who, when I hear scores and stuff like that, I kind of like the music to build an intensity. Every time I hear his music, it always feels like it's more atmospheric. And it always drops it, you know, and I'm like, I'm a little bit like of a trance raver that way. I like the music to keep building to something, you know.
Yeah.
Which doesn't necessarily work great if you're doing a film and stuff like that.
What did you call yourself?
A trance raver. I don't even know where the hell that term came from.
I bet your favorite movies go.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, man. I'm just thinking of, like, all the trance music I used to listen to all the time. Shit.
I like electronic music. I it's weird. We're talking about a lot of music on this podcast. I don't even know what to classify them, though. I guess I'm kind of an old fogey that way, as our parents would say.
Yeah.
But, like, I really like, you know, electronic, like, Underworld. I really like them a lot.
Yeah.
But I've never gotten the whole, like, dubstep, like, trance, like, you know, like, to me, it's all techno.
Yeah, I'm not really into dubstep, but I was really into trance. Like, I used to listen to the Crystal Method all the time.
Did you like Orb?
Yeah.
Or Orbital?
I'm not even sure who they are, to be honest.
You'd probably like it if you like trance.
Yeah, I probably should check them out. And you know, I'll basically be the first to admit that I'm like a musical novice when it comes to a lot of different, like, there are things that I just attach to because I heard it in something. Like Crystal Method, I think I attached to them because they had a song in one of the Matrix films. Not even the original. That's how I was exposed.
And Spawn.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how I was exposed to trance, was through the motherfucking Matrix.
Motherfucking Matrix.
That motherfucking Matrix. Especially the first one, though, because it was like the I don't even remember who was in that one, but I remember like listening to those songs from that film over and over again. And then there was that one trance song from the sequel, like the second one where Neo is fighting Agent Smiths everywhere. That song was like constantly being played in my home. It was, I'm actually kind of disgusted with myself now that I think about it. Like, why the hell did I do that to myself or my ears? God, could have been listening to good music. And no, I was listening to that bullshit because it had a tempo that I liked.
There was a moment when I thought Letters to Cleo was a really great band. Yeah, I still like Veruca Salt though. But
yeah, Veruca Salt, I actually do like them. But I was just, oh god, you know what I found the other day? I was going through an old hard drive that I just found, and it was from a computer that I had back in like 2001, and I was able to put it into you know, something to actually, you know, turn it into a portable drive. And I just wanted to see what was on it. That was about the only reason. There was like nothing important on it that I needed. I had two Creed albums.
Oh, no.
I wasn't the one who bought them, mind you. But because at that time, people would just give me stuff. And so I would like, you know, put it on a USB drive and put it on my computer. So I had two Creed albums. And I'm like, oh, God. And I would just play them. And it's just like, hey, it's like, oh god, I'm like, did we actually listen to this shit at one time?
I never listened to that shit at one time. I could not. When I remember my brother showed me a Creed video, it was like off one of their first album. It had to be like the first single, even before they blew up.
Oh god.
And I was just like, I mean, he's like the Michael Bolton of metal. I mean, that's I've never seen a dude love his chest more than another woman.
Oh god. I there was like maybe a period of time where I was like listening to it for like a brief moment. But I think one day, if I'm not mistaken, I was like walking somewhere, and that happened to be in my, well, CD player at the time. And I'm walking and I'm listening to this, and I like change CDs out, and I'm like, oh, okay, I'll listen to them. And I'm like, I maybe lasted for like 5 minutes. And then I took the CD out and I just took it like a frisbee and threw it into the bush. Like, nope, don't need that anymore.
Yeah, yeah. If it makes you feel any better, I used to have a tape, a cassette tape of the Back to the Future score. Mm-hmm. And I used to ride really fast on my bike while listening to it to pretend I was in a fucking DeLorean.
Oh, so. My God, dude. Like, that's like interchangeable with something that I did as a kid. Oh, good God. I would do that with Ghostbusters, though, like big time. Because I had
the, you too?
I had the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack, the one with like all the pseudo rap music and stuff like that. Because I call it pseudo rap because I'm not. It was kind of like right as rap was beginning.
Kind of like, you know, you got Arabian Rakim, and then you got Tennessee.
There's actually a rap from that album that I can still remember. It's the Spirit song, you know, the Spirit. Some people hear it, some people fear it.
Yeah, some people won't come near it.
Ghostbusters are back and they're all brand new. Come on. Oh god.
Oh, I remember that too. Wow.
It's serious. Right. Cold serious.
Well,
and somehow
at least you weren't beat.
Somehow we've gone from Hans Zimmer to Ghostbusters to
at least yours was innocent. At least it didn't turn into owning the Dirty Dancing soundtrack, turning you over into beating you into submission to Stockholm syndrome. So it makes you feel any better.
Oh God, that's fantastic. I would still tell people about that story after that podcast about Dirty Dancing.
Nobody puts baby in a corner unless she's a crazy bitch that's going to fucking beat you to dance with her.
No, Brock, I am working on t-shirt ideas right now for Straight Popcorn. Maybe I should do one with you and that girl. Just like pounding her fist like, you're going to play Dirty Dancing.
And my mom would be like, why are you taking your record player to take care, you know?
Because I had the time of my life.
Yeah, getting beat into submission.
Oh God.
See, I feel like we're like going back to the very first episode, but she stole my Pop Rocks one day.
Oh no, she didn't.
Because I brought them with me to daycare, and she took my motherfucking Pop Rocks, man.
Where the hell was the teachers and shit?
Oh, this was the 80s. They didn't give a shit about stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true. Like, oh, sorry, children, this is the 80s. We're not allowed to care.
We used to be able to bring plastic guns to school. I didn't give a shit.
Oh, God. Yeah, I remember that shit. Actually, in Arkansas, it was actually kind of encouraged.
Yeah. That and dating your sister.
Okay, children, go play with the sharp things and the knives.
The only place you go to sex education with your brother.
Oh, God.
Sorry. That's terrible.
All right. Well, Hans Zimmer to score Batman Superman.
And this is why you love the podcast, guys.
Yep, pretty much. But just the kind of, you know, my last say on that, I don't know. I mean, it'll be music.
Yeah. That's the headline.
Actually, I said that wrong. It'll be music?
Hans Zimmer scores another film. Mm-hmm. There'll be music.
I do have a prediction, though. I do have a prediction. I think that it's always going to be three tonal beats. Maybe he'll venture out and do four. Nah, he'll do three.
Wow. He's like is he the Cato Caitlin of composers? I mean, he's like the guy that did one thing and he's still appearing on Celebrity Def Jam or whatever.
I mean, look, honestly, there's a part of me that still loves Hans Zimmer because of, like, scores like The Gladiator.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's great. Where I'm just kind of overplaying.
Right. But, I mean, like, unfortunately, the guy, well, he's worked on a lot of Christopher Nolan films. And I think that Christopher Nolan actually does have a lot of say in the musical sound of his films. And it's kind of a signature kind of, you know, sound. So he's done a lot of those films in recent history. Yeah. Honestly, the ones though, my favorite of his are the ones that he actually did with like James Newton Howard. Cause I'm a big James Newton Howard fan. I love his music.
I'm a big, Fig Newton fan.
Yeah. And Fruit and Cake. All right. Ready to move on to the next bit of news.
Yeah. Master Splinter revealed.
Yes, I saw his backside.
Yeah, this is what I hate about the internet. I mean, really, guys, like, we see the back of Master Splinter's head, and we're going to freak out?
Yeah. Stop the presses.
And it's no wonder people make fun of the internet as a whole. I mean, guys, I hate movie culture on the internet anyway. I know we're part of that, mm-hmm. but, like, the point of, like... Like, I remember when I was a kid, I would get so excited. My mom, every time we would go to the grocery store, would buy me one magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, so that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, but if you got a magazine, I'll buy it for you. So, I used to buy, like, the movie magazines, like Fangoria. I would get, like, Starlog. You know, a lot of the, like, Rumor Mill magazines. And those were cool because they would just give... enough information. Now we're to the point that like we know everything
way too much. Yeah,
and it's kind of like I don't know if it's helping or killing film for me. Like, and I like discussing it and I'm not going to be a hypocrite about it, but it just sometimes feels overwhelming.
You know, one thing that I really do miss, and I don't think it's coming back, it's gone. So I'm just having to kind of like, you know, accept that. But I miss going into a movie and not knowing what trailers you're going to see, but hoping that you see like something that you've been waiting for forever. Now, when a trailer comes out, it hits the web, you know? So there's none of that anticipation anymore.
I know. I remember I was a huge Nightmare on Elm Street fan growing up. Mm-hmm. And when Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare came out in theaters, it premiered in front of Terminator 2 Judgment Day. And I remember going to see Terminator 2 Judgment Day twice just to see the Freddy's Dead trailer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I understand. I mean, I did the same thing when I was a kid. I think I would go see, because I was really into Batman, and that was from like the Tim Burton movies. So when Forever started, like I heard that there's going to be another Batman film, every single time I went to the theater, I was eagerly anticipating that trailer. Now, fortunately, it was Batman Forever and then Batman and Robin, but it doesn't change the fact that I was excited about it. You know, that I was like, oh my God, like something that I love is coming, and just to even have a glimpse of it was like life-changing. So yeah, I mean, I'm missing like, you know, certain things like that, you know, just that joy factor. Like actually Star Wars is an even better example, especially with like episode one, which again turned out to be dog shit, but you know, it doesn't change the fact like the anticipation building up to it was actually the enjoyable part of that experience.
Yeah, I remember when Phantom Menace came out. I mean, this is kind of, well, I wouldn't say internet at its infancy, but pretty damn close. Because it hadn't got to the point it is now. But, you know, you couldn't watch a trailer and it would run real well. So I remember, like, watching it on Entertainment Tonight, the trailer. And, like, I remember Entertainment Tonight was at one point the internet for movie geeks. Because you could go watch that episode every night and know that you're going to see something about some film coming out. But it was filtered, and that's kind of what exhausts me about the internet. There's not enough filtering going on.
Right. Way too much detail about every single movie that comes out, and you know the plot before it. And, hell, even the trailers are guilty of that now. Even though there were trailers back, of course, in the 80s and 90s that did the same thing, that showed you, like, the entire plot of the film, but it seems like it's a lot more common now, you know?
And we're the worst corporates for it, so, L, I think that we figured something out about our lives, and we just gotta quit doing the podcast now.
We hate ourselves.
Yeah.
We hate everything that the world has become, and it's all inside of us.
Yeah. We're not really quitting.
So, guys, yes, we saw the backside of Master Splinter. He was wearing a bathrobe, and he had a bow staff. So, yay. Okay, moving on.
Moving on.
This is a big one. You should probably take the lead on this one.
So, David Fincher has been said not to direct the Aaron Sorkin take on the Steve Jobs biopic. Now, from what I understand about this is that David Fincher wants $10 million up front. And if he gets the $10 million, he'll direct. But the studio just quickly said, no, we don't want to spend that amount of money. But the weird thing is David Fincher wasn't hung on that dollar amount. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why this is happening. I think it's a really piss-poor decision on Sony's part if they don't give him the $10 million. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, David Fincher brings a certain level to his films that usually most times end up being Oscar nominees. And for a Steve biopic to go to an Oscar nomination, and if we get the rumor that Christian Bale is going to play Steve Jobs, more than likely we're also going to get a Trent Reznor score. So there is a lot of money here to be made and so many angles for Sony to make that $10 million back. Because, I mean, really, is $10 million that much to Sony?
You know, am I mistaken? Who directed The Social Network?
David Fincher.
Okay, I was just making sure. I wasn't totally positive on that. Okay, so if you have the possibility of making another Social Network, except with the life of Steve Jobs, and you have the creative minds behind that film and the talent, why would you be, like, complaining at all? I mean, that film won so many awards, you know? It was like heralded everywhere. You know, people were talking about that film for a very long time after it came out. I mean, yeah, I agree. Sony's acting really, really stupid. This is $10 million. Give the guy his money, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you take a. I mean, when I heard about Social Network initially, it didn't even have the name, the Social Network. It was called Facebook, the Facebook movie. And everybody cringed. Even I was guilty of it. And I love David Fincher. And I was like, ugh, I don't know about that. You know, like, that's kind of too soon. And when that movie came out, it ended up becoming, honestly, one of my favorite films of the last 20 years. I love the Shakespearean aspect of it. And I mean, you're right. It's all star from beginning to end, like everything about the film. So it makes me question Sony's judgment, because you've got this film that could have easily been shit, and he made it a masterpiece. And now you've got something that's even more recognizable. Like, nobody, when that movie came out, really knew who Mark Zuckerberg was. I mean, they did, but they didn't. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't on a mainstream status of Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs is known. So you take the success of the Social Network and then make a film about Steve Jobs, you're gonna have a knockout of the park.
And I will say too, like we were talking about this before we started recording, but like, okay, so there was the Ashton Kutcher film Jobs, which I actually was referring to it when it came out. My name is Jobs. Just, you know, the just a little bit of Arrested Development joke with about what's his name? Judge Reinhold. Anyway, aside from that, my name is Jobs. You know, that film was like kind of straightforward and just kind of really covered the accomplishments and the successes of Steve Jobs. And like that, you know, like that's the problem with a lot of times when you don't have the right director, is it's not necessarily like that wasn't a horrible film. Ashton Kutcher didn't do a terrible job, but the story and the direction of that was about kind of heralding the accomplishments of Jobs, you know, kind of. And there was a movie that actually did it better, which was Pirates of Silicon Valley back in the 90s. And that was before all the Apple success, you know, actually when Apple was kind of fading away. So, you know, you have to really kind of approach these stories at a human level and really kind of dive in and get a unique perspective of these people. That's what David Fincher was able to do in The Social Network. So hopefully they do bring him on board, and I would love to see what he does with Jobs.
I agree with you about the Pirates of Silicon Valley. I think it's a really underrated movie, and unfortunately, through, you know, the changes of technology from DVD to Blu-ray, it hasn't been brought over into the Blu-ray, and it's kind of unfortunate because it is the better film to me. To me, Jobs, you know, it was an enjoyable watch, but you know what it was? It was Biff Tannen's promotional video in Back to the Future 2. You know, here's Biff Tannen, and he made $1 million from the Great Sports Almanac or whatever they did in that movie. But that's kind of like what the film's like. It's just like a big fluff piece, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, yeah, so let's hope that they do bring on Fincher for that and Sony comes to their senses. It's not like they're going to be suffering if they give the guy $10 million. That's just stupid on their part.
Right. Which brings me to something else. What did you think of the Gone Girl trailer? Because that came out this week.
I actually, it looked really, really interesting. My first actual reaction to that was like, I don't know anything about it. You know, you were actually the one who gave me a little bit of info, but I was like, is this based on a true story or something like that? Just because there's a line in it that sounds like I've heard that before. But I think it's
Well,
more just capturing, I guess, like similar elements of like real life, you know, like, I don't know.
I'll give, for people that don't know what Gone Girl is, I'll give a synopsis. This is actually from the back of the book. Marriage can be a real killer. On a warm summer morning in North Catheridge, Missouri, it is Nick and Amy Dunn's fifth wedding anniversary. Presents are being wrapped and reservations are being made when Nick's clever and beautiful wife disappears from the rented McMansion on the Mississippi River. Husband of the year Nick isn't doing himself any favors with cringeworthy daydreams about the slope and shape of wife's head, but passages from Amy's diary reveal an alpha girl perfectionist could put anyone in dangerously on the edge.
Interesting.
So, and it stars Tyler Perry, Ben Affleck, Neil Patrick Harris, Patrick Fugit, and Casey Wilson.
In that order.
Not in that order. I kind of forgot that there had been Affleck in the beginning.
I'm like, Tyler Perry. I saw him in the trailer, but I'm like, okay.
Thanks for being a dick, Al. I was trying to let that one just pass by, but that's not going to work today.
No. Actually, it's your fault. You said Tyler Perry first. I mean, I'm sorry.
But you pointed it out, so now I look like a straight jackass.
But it's like a giant flaming object that you put out there. It's like you took a shit, and you're like, oh, don't mind that.
Well, yeah, I do that a lot. That's the whole point.
Oh, God. But actually, I mean, yeah, I have no problem with Tyler Perry. I know a lot of people do and stuff like that. I'm not a fan of his films, but I don't think the guy should not be in anything. I don't know. Anyway.
What do you mean?
Well, I've talked to some people, like, remember when he played that small role in Star Trek, you know, as one of the admirals on the council and stuff like that? People were like throwing a bitch fit, like, I can't believe they put him in that film. And they were like disgusted by it because of, you know, all the Tyler Perry films and shit like that. I'm like, look, guys, you don't have to be a fan of his stuff, but I mean, he did fine. He came in, he played the role and stuff like that. I didn't see Madea when he was doing that. So
look, dude, as like the hugest Madea's Family Christmas fan out there. Yeah, I'm totally full of shit. I hate this dude.
Oh, God.
How
did those words come out of your mouth?
Have you ever seen those films? Like, have you ever sat and watched one of those movies?
One time, I was living at a place where, or I was staying at a place, and the person there was like, oh, you know what, if you want to watch a comedy, I'm like, sure. And they're like, oh, God, I have something that is so funny. And they put on one of the Madea films. I don't even remember which one it was. This was like 2006. And I remember sitting there like, what the fuck is happening? Just like, why can't he talk normal?
Yeah, I've seen them. And they are some of the worst trite I've ever seen in my life. Like, every film is so convoluted with drama that, like, I just can't get into it.
What was that last one that he did? The one about the wife who was cheating and somehow AIDS came into the picture or something like that?
Otherwise known as someone gave money to Kim Kardashian to be in a movie. I think that's what they should have called it.
Oh, God. But, I mean, I remember even like recently I read someone, a friend of mine, they directed me to an article about like, apparently he was like nominated or received award or was a presenter at some sort of like women's presentation, like for like a feminist group and stuff like that. And these people were furious about that because they're like, his films are so degrading to women. And he reinforces like, you know, stereotypes and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't really understand why his films are so popular and stuff like that, but whatever.
Yeah. I don't get it either. I think it's like a female thing.
But most women I know don't like, you know, the films that he does. I mean, I don't know. It's really odd. I mean, I would like to actually see who ends up going to, really talk to a fan and like kind of find out, you know, like, what is it about these films that like brings you back? I don't know.
I love the movie. I love the fact that she says, yes, she did all the time.
That sounds too normal for that film. You heard it did.
Yeah. Yes, she did.
All right. Well, Die Hard 6 is being made, I guess, because they didn't learn their lesson from the last one. But they want someone to come back from the third film. Do you want to announce who that is, Brock?
Yeah, Samuel Jackson is being rumored to be courted for Die Hard 6.
That's right. Samuel L. motherfucking Jackson.
Please get this Madea off this motherfucking plane.
Oh, God. You know what? There was part of me, and I almost did this earlier, was like, I just want to say Lawrence Fishburne.
What do you mean, Lawrence Fishburne?
Oh, God. I still think about that guy from KTLA.
That jackass.
Yeah, so how was it making The Matrix?
I loved you, and guess who's coming to dinner?
You're so good on Hannibal. Oh, man. But, yeah, I guess they want Samuel Jackson back for it. Do you think they're going to get him?
I mean, anything can happen, you know.
He does so much work. Like, the guy works on so many damn movies all the time. I think it's very likely, to be honest.
Yeah, I do, too. I think that they could bill it as, or rebrand it in a sense, that they could bring him in and have equal star power. He actually has bigger star power than Bruce Willis now.
And he's less of a jackass. Well, he's not a jackass. He's just... Maybe that's what they're thinking. Like, oh, well, everyone knows now because of Kevin Smith and other people that Bruce Willis is a dickhead.
Yeah.
I wonder...
But, I mean, I hope so. I think that one was one of the better ones in the series. Mm-hmm. Die Hard with a Vengeance. So if they bring it back and they could get back to that kind of dynamic, that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I would probably go see that. I didn't like the last one at all, but you know what? I'll be honest. I actually really did like Live Free or Die Hard. I thought that was actually pretty good.
Yeah, it was mindless fun.
Yeah,
I mean that's
not like an intense story. Not really up to par with the older films, but still, I thought it was actually a really entertaining film, and thought Justin Long was really good in it. You know, there's some elements to that film I'm like, yeah, cool. And you know, of course, Kevin Smith as the Warlock.
Yeah, that part I actually could have done with that.
Yeah, me too, actually. Not that he did bad, it was just like, it's not really helping the story, but anyway.
And so that's it for this week. We will resume here and record another episode at the end of the week. But for Straight Popcorn, I'm Brock Vincent Sharp.
My name is Al Nichols.
Keep popping! I won't accident you, never want to let you on. Protection now, whoa, 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 whoa. On this day, everyone comes to play.